Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
It is time for Dr. History, and he showed up with his entourage. He gets catered now, you know, with all kinds of amenities. They take him in a specially built limousine and everything, and they just drove up in the front yard and dropped him off. And our thanks go out to our sponsor, which, of course, is Minnecashia Sales. 1321 East Main Street in Burley with Zach and the rest of the crew, 878-2091, right across from the Burley Airport. Good morning, Dr. History.
Good morning. That's a cowboy limousine, you know.
Yeah, they give you a ride in the back of the pickup.
That's right. And say, hang on.
There you go.
Yep.
You know, last week we talked a little bit about Jim Bridger.
Right.
And we were talking about the movie The Revenant, etc. And the toughness of these mountain men. They had to be their own doctor. They had to be their own nursemaid when they were sick. They had to do it all, didn't they?
They did. You know, they were definitely a breed apart. And, you know, we talked about Hugh Glass, of course, which is what the movie's about.
Right.
And
right.
If people want to hear that story on our show, they can go back to April 29th of 2014. And there's also, we did another one about Bridger on June 10th of 2014.
Okay, you looked those up.
So, yeah, so there's two shows back in 2014 that talk about this. But I did find out since last week that Hugh Glass, of course, he never was able to kill Bridger or Fitzgerald. But he actually continued trapping and actually came right up in our area, right along here in the Snake River.
Really?
As a trapper and a mountain man, went right on up the Snake and actually was over on the Yellowstone River with two other guys when they were attacked by about 30 Arikara Indians and killed. So that was
kidding.
That was where Hugh Glass was killed.
So he lived through the bear attack.
Right.
And he lived through the absolute leaving of his partners, left him for dead.
Right.
And then he gets killed later by the Indians.
Yeah. Yep.
Wow.
But he did catch up with the guys he wanted to revenge against, but didn't.
Yeah.
Really. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to talk again about Jim Bridger, but he's kind of a secondary character in this story, so to speak.
Okay.
We're going to talk about a guy by the name of Joseph Meek.
M-E-E-K.
Yes.
All
and
right.
You may have heard of him. But, you know, trapping was not a business which could be carried on profitably by large parties of men. Though the main camp might contain many camp keepers, Indian women, children, packers, horse guards, the men who harvested the fur had to operate in small groups or alone. And unfortunately, that's why some of them were never heard of again, too. When Jim Bridger's brigade moved over from the headwaters of the Snake River to Yellowstone Country, Joseph L. Meek went on far ahead alone.
All by himself.
By himself.
Wow.
Okay, on the fifth day out from camp, a large war party of Crows caught up with him. They were on the prairie, and Meek was forced to skip to the creek bottom and riding his mule for all he was worth, trying to get away. Of course, it was swarming with these Indians. They were hard on his trail, yelling and shooting, a random shot now and then as they closed in on him. Now, unfortunately, the beaver had drained the water out of the creek and made dams, and Meek's mule mired down in the swamp.
Uh-oh.
And you've seen horses or mules. When they get in mud,
yeah.
You know, they're just pretty much...
There's trouble in River City.
There is. So, by the time the Indians were close, he was ready for them. And he brought Old Sally, as he called his rifle, up to his face, ready to fire his last shot. And as he puts it, "I knew it were death this time unless Providence interfered to save me, and I didn't think Providence would do it." So he kind of figured this was his last hurrah.
You know, right there I want to ask you, we've talked about this in the past, and I don't mean to interrupt, but we're talking about the old cap and ball rifles.
One shot.
One shot, and then reload.
Yeah.
And it's not like the guys on the other side of the rifle are going to say, "Oh, wait a minute, he's reloading."
That's right. Hold up. So, but... In this case, the Crow chief was in the lead.
Uh-huh.
And when he found himself looking down the muzzle of Meek's gun, he slowed up and yelled to him. He says, "Lay down your gun and you will live." Now, Meek's state of mind was kind of easily understood. And here's what he said. "Well, I like to live. Being then in the prime of life, and though it hurt me powerful, I resolved to part with Sally."
Now, he took a big risk in the thought and belief that when a chief talks to you, A, was it really the chief? B, is he a man of his
right,
word?
Exactly. Well, he says, "I laid her down. As I did so, the chief picked her up, and one of the braves sprang at me with a spear."
Uh-oh.
"And would have run me through, but the chief knocked him down with the butt of my gun."
Really?
So that's a good thing. So far, so good. Okay, they led Meek out to the high prairie south of the stream. There they all halted and turned him over to three Indian women, while the warriors sat down in a circle to smoke and decide his fate.
You never did tell me if he got the mule out of the mud.
I think he did.
Okay.
They wouldn't leave him. So Meek, however, never lost his nerve, and while they debated, he coolly counted them. There were 187 warriors, 9 boys, and 3 Indian women guarding him.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Yeah. This wasn't a small party. So they talked for what seemed...
And he's the only white guy there,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. For about 3 hours, he just sat while they were debating what to do with him.
It's probably a good thing he did.
Yeah. Yeah. So then the head chief, his name was The Bold.
The Bold.
He summoned Meek into the ring. He said, "I have known the whites for a long time, and I know them to be great liars, deserving of death. But," he says, "if you will tell the truth, you will live." Okay, now here's where it gets interesting.
Ask me anything you want to know.
In fact, this might be a good time for a break, Zeb.
I think it is. We'll leave them hanging like those Saturday morning cereals. Minnecash's Sales, 1321 East Main Street in Burley, right across from the airport. They've got all your lumber. Zach said, "Listen, a lot of you folks got together during Christmas and New Year's and said, well, gee, maybe come spring we'll do this, that, and the other to remodel." Well, Minnecash's Sales has everything you need, along with all the best of Western Window. Too. Hey, stop in. You'll see what I mean. They have your carpet, your vinyl, your lumber packages. They've also got all the Tartar Farm and Ranch gates and panels, everything at Minnecash Sales, 1321 East Main Street in Burley, right across from the airport. Number to call, 878-2091. Minnecash Sales, bringing you Dr. History. And now, back to the powwow.
All right. So here we have Meek sitting there amongst the Indians, and the chief saying that he thinks most whites are liars. So here's what Meek thought to himself. He thought, "They will fetch the truth out of me if there is any in me."
Uh-huh. That's how he worded
That's the way he worded it.
Yeah.
So the chief went on. He said, "Tell me, where are the whites you belong to, and what's your captain's name?" Well, Meek looked the chief in the eye and said proudly, "Bridger is my captain's name, or in the Crow tongue, Kasapi."
Let's stick with Bridger.
Also known as the Blanket Chief.
Okay.
Did you know that? Bridger is called the Blanket Chief?
No, and I'm not going to ask
I don't know
questions
why.
Either.
Okay. So that gave the Crow Chief something to think about.
I see.
He thought for quite a while. Then he demanded, "How many men has he?" Now, Meek knew that Bridger's company contained some 240 men.
Yeah.
Enough to lick the hind sides of the Crow War Party. But he also knew that if he told the truth as to their numbers, the Crows would hightail it out of there, take him with him, or kill him. His chances of seeing Bridger again would be pretty slim.
Uh-huh.
So, here's where we get tricky.
Oh, boy.
On the other hand, if he lied to the Indians and so encouraged them to go looking for Bridger's camp, it was certain the Crows would want to kill him when they found out he had lied to them.
Now, isn't this a danged if you do and danged
if you
don't? Yeah,
it is. It is. But Meek was one of the bravest of the mountain men, and he said 40. 40 men. As opposed to 240.
Yeah, yeah.
So he left it about 200 short. So the Crow,
what's
a couple hundred mountain men with guns and knives? So the Crows relaxed. The chief laughed. He says, "We will make them poor," said he, "and you shall live, but they shall die."
Uh-oh.
Now Meek thought, hardly, but he kept a poker face and said nothing. Well, when the chief asked him where he expected to rejoin Bridger's camp, Meek gave him an honest answer and told him how many days before Bridger would reach the appointed place. Now, Meek wanted the Crows to find that camp. Okay, so here we go. The Indians began to hustle around, packing up for the march to meet Bridger. Two of them mounted Meek's mule, so obviously they got him out of the mud. Out of the mud. The women loaded him down with packs of moccasins stuffed with dried meat. Now, this I thought was interesting. A war party always carried its pemmican packed in new moccasins to save weight.
Pemmican. Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Packed in what?
In their moccasins, in new moccasins.
Oh, man. I hope the guy didn't have athlete's foot.
Yeah. So, because what would happen is they would, as fast as the ration was consumed, the pemmican, the new moccasins were needed to replace the worn-out moccasins.
Duh.
So, anyway, an interesting side note there. But anyway, the scouts preceded the party. 70 warriors formed the advance guard. Meek marched with the women and boys in the middle, and the rest of the warriors followed. Now, to amuse themselves, the Indian women prodded Meek with sticks to keep him moving, saying over and over again, with much laughter, "White man very poor now."
I
so
see.
You can see them just kind of poking him and
yeah.
prodding him along. But Meek was glad there were only three women along to keep poking him. So there was only three of them, but anyway, they traveled till late that night, then camped. The Indians slept in a circle with Meek in the center. He did not sleep very well.
Well,
I don't know why.
Now, can you imagine?
Yeah. So all the next day, they marched in the same manner, Meek keeping his temper with difficulty and saying nothing. That evening, they put him to cooking over the party and again on the third and fourth days. So he actually cooked for them.
Really?
A little bit. So
you'd think they wouldn't trust him.
Yeah. But anyway, on the last day, Meek was feeling pretty bad. Bridger was bound to show up soon. And if anything went wrong, he knew the Crows would rub him out.
Yeah. In other words, that's it.
That's it. On that last day, the Indian scouts left their horses on the slope of a ridge ahead and crept up to peer over.
Uh-oh.
Right away, one of them came running back, mounted his horse, and rode rapidly in a big circle to indicate a big party of enemies over the ridge.
This is where old Meek is in trouble.
He's kind of getting in trouble. So Meek could only trust to luck. He understood the signals of the scouts perfectly. Now the time had come. They all rode to the top of the hill overlooking the Yellowstone River and the vast plains beyond. And about 3 miles away, Meek recognized Bridger's big camp with hundreds of horses grazing around. Then Meek saw Bridger's horse guard make the signal that indicated that they had discovered the Indians. It was a showdown. So the horse guard evidently was like a bunch of men out in front riding ahead.
Of Bridger?
Yes.
Okay.
So here's what Meek said.
Kind of like your forward scouts.
Yes, yes. That's a good way to put it. So Meek said, "I thought the camp a splendid sight that evening. It made a powerful show to me, who did not expect ever to see it after that day, and it were a fine sight anyway from the hill where I stood."
Yeah, but wait a minute. He's got to get there first.
Right. "About 250 men and women and children in great numbers and about 1,000 horses and mules. Then the beautiful plain and the sinking sun and the herds of buffalo that could not be numbered and the cedar hills covered with elk. I never saw so fine a sight as all that looked to me then."
Mm-hmm.
Well, when he turned his eyes on the savage Crow band and saw the chief standing, amazed with his hand over his open mouth, saw the warriors' tomahawks and spears glittering in the sunlight.
What did he do?
His heart shrunk up to about half its right size. He knew he was found out.
Yeah, he was done.
The chief turned on him with a terrible scowl. He said, "I promised that you should live if you told the truth, but you have told me a great lie."
Oh, boy. It sounds like his TV series is going to get canceled.
Not so good. Well, all the warriors gathered around with their weapons in hand, but Meek knew better than to show any weakness. He kept his eyes fixed on Bridger's horse guard, who was riding up the hill to drive in the horses. Now, this movement distracted the chief and his warriors, and when the horse guard had come to within about 200 yards of the Crows, the chief ordered Meek to yell to him to come to them. Okay, now Meek stepped forward and yelled as loud as he could, "Keep off or you'll be killed. Tell old Gabe," which is Bridger, "to try to talk with these Indians and help me get away." Well, by that time, the horse guard was between the Crows and Bridger's horses, and he headed them back to camp on a dead run. Now, Jim Bridger got the word that his old companion, Joe Meek, was captive and in danger of death. He wasted no time. After a few questions, he called his leaders together, gave instructions. Now, that's going to be important here in a minute.
Okay.
Caught up his rifle, mounted his big white horse, then Jim rode out alone until he was within about 300 yards of the Indians. There he reined up, scanning the line of Indians on the ridge. His eyes caught a familiar figure, and he yelled out, "What tribe are they, Meek?" he shouted. And Meek's yell came back, "Crows." Then Bridger knew how to go ahead. And I mentioned last week, Bridger knew a lot of the languages of a lot of the Indian tribes.
Yeah, he was pretty knowledgeable.
Yeah. He shouted, "Tell the big chief to send one of his little chiefs to smoke with me."
Big chief, little chief.
Yes. Jim saw Meek turn to the Bold, the big chief, to translate the message. After a little thought, the Crow chief beckoned to Little Gun, to go forward and smoke with the Blanket chief. Okay, so are we straight?
Bring your can of Prince Albert.
That's right. So here's Little Gun and Bridger. So meanwhile, Jim, scanning the line of Indians on the ridge, could see all the warriors openly preparing for a fight, shaking out their war bonnets and one thing another, and painting their faces, straightening their best arrows, loading their guns.
Oh, no.
Okay. Now, this is the part that gets... I like the whole thing. But anyway, Jim saw Little Gun coming and dismounted. Now, Jim knew the Crow rules of warfare. He began to strip off his clothing. He threw
Why
down.
Why is it that every time something gets serious, they start going naked?
I don't know. He threw down his hat, pulled off his long-tailed hunting coat, shed his shirt, kicked off his buckskin leggings until he stood in nothing but moccasins and a breechcloth.
He wasn't totally okay.
Little Gun also halted and undressed, laying his weapons ready on top of his buckskins.
Huh.
Then both men, holding their open palms, walked toward each other with nothing. Much on.
It sounds like San Francisco.
The reason they did this is so they could see nobody was carrying a weapon.
Oh.
All right. Now, Little Gun came on. Jim saw that he was a big, ugly fellow with long hair hanging to his heels, with a stiff pompadour smeared with red paint standing high over his painted forehead. Little Gun was strutting. He felt sure that Jim had no heart to attack him, for then Meek would be gone forever. Well, when the two men met, they lowered their arms to hug and kiss each other.
What?
According to custom.
I was kidding about San Francisco.
But as they embraced, Bridger took care to stand so that Little Gun's back was turned toward a gully which cut through the ridge a little to one side. Now, this is going to be important in a minute.
I'm listening.
Okay, now here's what Bridger said. That Crow wore greasy and sweaty and smeared with paint. But Jim kept on hugging him and kissing his ugly face all the time, looking anxiously over the Indian's shoulders, keeping his eyes glued to that gully. It seemed to Jim that he would have to hug that lousy Indian all day before he caught sight of his five armed trappers, who suddenly showed themselves at the end of the gully within easy rifle shot. Little Gun was cut off and held prisoner. Bridger did not need to hug him any longer. Thank goodness.
Man.
Well, he turned the Indian loose and quickly stepped back. The tricked Crows on the ridge began to mount their horses and line up for a charge on the five trappers to recover their naked chief. Little Gun heard the yelling, looked around, and saw how he was trapped. And before Little Gun or his friends could do anything, 100 mountain men popped out of this gully.
A hundred.
And came trotting towards Bridger, forming a line to repel the charge. Well,
and they were fully clothed.
They were indeed. Bridger yelled to Meek. He said, "Tell the chief to send you to me, and I will let Little Gun go."
Okay.
So Jim saw Meek turn to the chief, and the Crow said, "I cannot afford to give a chief one white man," but he said, "Okay, we'll do this." So when Meek had safely crossed Little Gun's clothes and weapons, Jim gave the Crow the signal to be on his way.
There you go.
So they traded prisoners.
Yep.
So that evening, the Crow chief with 40 of his warriors came peacefully into Bridger's camp to make a truce, and the chief explained that the Crows had been formerly at war with white men, but now he said, "We want to be friends with your camp so that we can all fight together against the Blackfeet."
They all sang Kumbaya.
Yeah. And who are everybody's enemies, the Blackfeet. So to make the truce firm, the Crows brought in Meek's mule, his gun Sally, and all his stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
He got the mule back.
He got
back.
Everything back.
I'll be done.
So old Gabe, Bridger, and his mountain men sat in a ring with the Crows and gravely smoked the pipe in a temporary peace. But before the Crows left Jim's camp, their chief walked up to Meek and said, "Today I give you a new name. Shyam Shaspusia."
I'm sure glad you said that.
"For you can outlie the Crows."
Really?
So he gave him a name, meaning you are a better liar.
So when you say to somebody Shampusian,
that's
not really good.
That's not a good thing.
Okay.
So that's the story of Meek and Bridger. And this by this time, Bridger was about 30 years old.
Yeah, so always be careful when you're up in the South Hills and you see two guys running along naked.
And watch who you're kissing and hugging. Oh, that one kind of made me a little...
I'm glad you've had that story and not me. Oh, doctor, you did it again. You know, really, you did it again. That's another very interesting story. So they were peaceful with the Crows, but they thought the Blackfeet were the bad guys.
Right. And you know, and as often went on, you know, they would have treaties. They would, and some of the guys, some of the Indian agents were very good to the Indians on the reservations. Others were absolutely terrible to the Indians. I mean, it was just a give and take all through that time, you know. And you can't blame the Indians for all the lies and the treaties that were broken.
No, not at all. One thing you might want to look up, and I'm not going to say it on the air because I'm not sure about it being truthful, but the way that the Indians processed and made the pemmican is very interesting.
It is.
And it's not very tasteful, I'll tell you that.
I've never had it, but I, yeah.
The way they made it.
Oh, the way they made it,
you might want to check that out.
Okay.
Okay. Dr. History, again, brought to you by Minnecashia Sales, 1321 East Main Street in Burley, right across from the airport, 878-209. Zach and the whole crew bringing you my buddy, Dr. History. Thank you very much.
You have a good day, Zeb.
God bless you, and we'll see you next week.
Yes.
All right, buddy. Thanks much.
Our kids have said to us since we moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.